Guest host Shane Hewitt here on The Rush. Thank you for joining us in this conversation. I have learned many things in my life. I have learned, for example, that having a big dog is a big responsibility. That's one topic that we're going to get into here. I've also learned that covering your eyes and trying to throw a dart at a dartboard is extremely difficult to do, regardless of what you might see in the movies. And strangers are just people that you've never met yet. Let's bring in Reverend Michael Corrin, News Talk 1010 contributor, and Karen Stintz, former city councilor and TTC chair, is now the president and CEO of Variety Village. Michael, thank you very much for being here.
Pleasure.
And Karen, thanks for joining us. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Okay, couple of topics to bounce around our smart speakers today. It is ugly. It is every responsible dog owner's worst fear, but at the same time, my dog would never do that. Mm-hmm. Where are we breaking down here? First of all, Karen, let's start with you on the story of the child this weekend of the dog attack.
Yeah, this is, you know, I'm really glad that that woman was charged for all kinds of reasons. Her dog should not have been off leash. She should not have run away from the scene. And, you know, sometimes dogs do things that are unpredictable, but to have a dog maul a child is out of the norm of unpredictable dog behavior. That is something that is shouldn't be new to a dog owner and something that needs to be seriously the dog owner seriously needs to be held to account there.
Now, it seems to me that all of the tools are in place for this, Michael, that the, you know, the laws are there. This was pounced upon quickly. The dog has been seized and taken away. And it seems like this has happened very quickly. Is everything in place?
Well, I wouldn't word it quite like that myself. Pounced upon.
Yeah, very good point. I'm going to go full stop there. Actually, Michael, I'm going to apologize for that because that was a bad choice for words. Thanks for saying that.
I mean, that's okay. I mean, I read the reports. I couldn't find the breed mentioned. Do we know the breed?
No, and I brought that up earlier, that does it matter the breed, because a bad dog is a bad dog. And I'm kind of glad the breed at least wasn't in the articles I read.
No, actually, it matters a great deal, and I get a bit tired of this. People will say, well, golden retrievers bite more often than any other dog. That's an urban myth. There are more golden retrievers around, so there are more attacks. We have a Parson Russell Terrier, wonderful dog. She's almost 12 now. If she suddenly, for some reason, totally out of character, attacked a child, that would be dreadful. If a pit bull, if a Rottweiler, if a large aggressive dog does it, it could be fatal. So we must stop making these ridiculous comparisons. People who have certain types of dog have a purpose in mind, and it's not because they want to help the poor and go and work with the hungry. It's because they want to show that they're a certain type of person, they're strong and they're tough. Now,
yeah, but I have a giant dog, though, sir, and I don't think because I love giant dogs. I love the demeanor of, I have a Great Dane. I mean, so for me, it's not about being strong and tough. I mean, in anything, she's a clown.
Well, Great Danes are different. I mean, they're known to be fairly gentle, but even so. But the point is, I mean, we take the dog to off-leash parks, two or three in particular. I've never seen in all the years, I've never seen any sort of issue. But sometimes there are. And everything about this case, about the woman's actions, indicate that she wasn't responsible. Now, she tried to intervene, as did the father of the child. But we can never stop. I mean, we mustn't overreact, but nor should we underreact. You can never rule out the chance of a dog doing something he's out of character. But I'm afraid I'm very quite draconian about this. I do think that the breeds that could kill someone. I used to work with a guy who intervened when a pit bull went after, and they were smaller then, they're bigger now, attacked a child. And he said he was a big guy. When he was grappling with the dog, every time he released his hold just a little bit, it would go crazy again. These things are deadly. So yes, dog attacks will occur. We can make sure, God forbid when they do, that at least they're not fatal.
Well, I think we can all agree about that, that if we reverse engineer this story, Karen, that we start from the child first that got hurt, we all sort of land in the agreement place there that it's not okay.
Oh my God, 100%. It's never okay to have your dog go and attack a child or another dog or another person. Like, it's not okay. But I actually do think it is important that the breed is immaterial, because as an owner of a Doberman, my Doberman never attacked anybody.
Yeah.
You know, so I I think it's important that every single dog owner understands their responsibilities, that when they own a pet, they need to be a responsible pet owner. And that means leashing your pet when it needs to be leashed, not letting your dog run off leash in a park that's not designated for that purpose, keeping an eye on your dog, making sure your dog is close. And if your dog is demonstrating any behavior that's erratic, they need to be muzzled. So, you know, there are things in place to make sure that this kind of thing doesn't happen. And I don't know the backstory of this animal, but yeah. I think every dog owner needs to wake up and be aware that they are responsible for the dog's behavior.
Yeah, and I think that the backstory part is where the questions land, because if this was a dog that was supposed to be under our rules and agreements, that this dog was supposed to be dealt with differently, that was not followed. I can tell you this as a large breed owner, that when my dog, as friendly and, you know, frankly stupid as she is, goes running at somebody in a park, that's terrifying to them, even though the worst thing that could come of it is probably a slobber. On the other end is certainly a problem, right? So Reverend Michael Corrin is here. Karen Stintz is here as well on Smart Speakers. The topic of stormwater charges, Michael, you know, sometimes God makes it rain, my friend.
Yeah, I speak to him personally every day, and apparently he does. Yeah, look, everyone in government is looking for a new way to raise money. That's what this comes down to. Another way to try and increase revenue to provide things that have to be provided for. I don't know if this is the best solution to it, but I'm not surprised by it in any way. I mean, I would argue that with, I don't know where I stand exactly on climate change and how quickly it's progressing, but certainly it's very strange these days. With the rains that we do have, with the strength and a number, then yes, it was inevitable something like this will be proposed. Do I understand the full policy of it? Not completely. And I don't really know how it will be implemented. And I'm very skeptical about that.
Well, I think the parking lot argument is a very solid argument about the taxes are different when there's not a dwelling there, and the amount that they pay, even though they contribute as much as everybody else does, is integral. But Karen, you can't predict how much it's going to rain, when it's going to rain, or what that number might be at all. This is where we cover our eyes and try to throw a dart at a dartboard and profiteer off it.
Well, and I do think that there is this mindset that we can tax people's behavior to then produce outcomes that are beneficial for the environment. And I think that there's a flaw there, a fundamental flaw, because, you know, ultimately, you know, how much am I accountable for stormwater runoff in my property, and how much should I have to pay for that? No one can tell me. Nobody can tell me. And so to suggest that somebody can is lunacy. Also, to suggest that you can just tax my behavior to the point where, I mean, I guess I could sit in my house with my solar panels and, you know, power my my refrigerator with my bike, you know, and then eat, you know, hemp or whatever I'm growing in my backyard. That's not a reasonable expectation of anybody. And so we need to move away from this tax behavior that we want to see approach to how we're going to deal with climate change. Because climate change is serious, and it is something that needs to be dealt with, and it can't be. We all have to do our part, and I'm not getting away from the idea that we all have to contribute where we can, but we're not going to tax citizens through this problem. It has to be a more meaningful, thoughtful, productive discussion about how we're going to deal with some of these issues that are quite real.
Well, I just want to add one thing there before you go, Michael, is that I've received speeding tickets in the past, and I have since still sped. Doesn't work. Please go ahead.
I'm sorry. I mean, first of all, I don't think caricatures, with all due respect, caricatures don't help. No one is talking about trying to power the fridge by getting on an exercise bike or anything like that. In fact, taxation does alter behavior. I mean, there is ample evidence to prove that to be the case. We know it has. Not in isolation, though. Education as well, and an action from government. But, I mean, I'm going to be absolutely honest. I don't know if this is the right policy or not. I do know we have to do something, and we don't achieve anything by just sitting back and saying it will all be okay. We've seen, though, in terms of tobacco consumption and so on, and you mentioned speeding, it does have an effect. If people are penalized financially, and taxation is a form of penalization, even if we don't want to say that, often the behavior does change. I am more conscious now of the way we use hydro and gas. I'd like to say it's because I'm socially conscious. It's not really. It's because I don't want to pay bills and I can get away with it. So something has to be done. What exactly it is, I'm not entirely sure.
Well, to support your point, that I think that everybody in Ontario has had their experience of what electricity can cascade into costing if we're not careful, as per the past. So that is a lesson that we've all learned when it comes to the cost of all things. Reverend Michael Corin is here. Karen Stintz is here. I'm Shane Hewitt. I'm the guest host on The Rush. We are going to come back with a conversation about the fabric of our society being torn apart. You want to talk about temptation? Well, that is very much happening, according to a new article. Speakers, Karen Stintz, former city councillor and TTC chair, is now the president and CEO of Variety Village. Reverend Michael Corin, News Talk 1010 contributor, and guest host Shane Hewitt. It looks like our country is falling apart. Violent threats have become increasingly common, it seems. And a new report says that the fabric of our society is getting torn apart. Michael Corin, I like to be positive. I like to lean into the power of humanity and believe in people. Are we losing it?
Well, I mean, I'd like to eat chocolate all day and never put on weight, but I'm afraid that's not going to happen. It's not just Canada. This is a problem. If we could identify it according to one nation or one culture, we could address it. But throughout the Western world, there has been a decay. There has been for some years, but it's really been speeded up enormously by social media. Nor is it confined to one political group. The hard right, or actually beyond the hard right, the right in general can be appallingly hysterical. Oppose Trudeau all you want, but threats on his life, abusive language on the back of pickup trucks, hysteria, conspiracy theories. But then look at the left and look at the way they're behaving. Look at some of the protests about Gaza, as appalling as Gaza is in so many ways. Some of the anti-Semitism that has been spewed. And we start with Kate Middleton, believing every lunatic idea that's put out there. This does decay the society, the fabric of a society. There used to be, not that long ago, we would have this collective idea of what was right and what was wrong. We tended to watch the same television, listen to the same radio. Obviously, News Talk 1010. But that's all changed. We're such a disparate and diverse. I don't mean ethnically diverse. That's not a bad thing at all. I mean, we're so diverse in what we think is acceptable now. And yeah, it deeply worries me. I've seen a deterioration and decay. And in the next 10 years will be vital, particularly with other countries, China and Russia, so on, trying to influence our body politic. We have to be very, very careful. And politicians, and I really do think that conservative politicians in particular should take note, have to condemn some of the idiocy and the threats of violence that are taking place.
Now, Karen, right and wrong is one thing, but integrity we know inside. Is it possible that we've just been complacent and not been of integrity as citizens for the last, I don't know, 7 or 8 years, really, since social media took over? And maybe it's possible there's been a fox in the hen house all along with what Michael said about, you know, foreign interference, for example.
I think there is no question that the extreme left and the extreme right have taken some space in the mainstream, which we've collectively allowed to let happen because we've just chosen to be silent about it. And certainly I know that there's lots of conversations I do not engage in because I just don't think that they're going to end up with any kind of productive conclusion. And it's because, you know, the topics aren't even necessarily that controversial on the surface, but then as you take opinions on them, and if they're very, they can become very polarizing very quickly, depending on your point of view. And I do think that there are many people that have just chosen to stay silent instead of engage. And I think that that has been to our collective detriment.
C63 is not on our list, but boy, oh boy, when the threat that something somebody said 7 years ago could put them in jail, mm-hmm. or a comedian, yeah. who goes on stage and makes jokes. Now, I don't have to like the jokes, but when the possibility of life imprisonment and the incentivization of somebody complaining and getting paid to complain, that mm-hmm. becomes a much larger conversation. So I'm going to take our next topic and just get at it now, because we both talked about online behavior, which was Instagram limiting political content, which is this sort of shadow banning notion that's going on. Michael, is it possible that, yes, these things are going on, they're protecting their business? Or is it also possible that maybe we like to blame shadow banning because we think what we're saying is more important than anybody cares to actually read and share?
You know, the great tragedy of the internet and online conversation was it allowed people to the citizen journalists, if you like, to have a comment. The tragedy, though, is it allowed people to say whatever they want. And no one knows how to control it. It's rather like newspapers trying to work out a way to make money out of articles. If they put up a paywall, people won't read them. Otherwise, they can't make any money. And the people, Twitter, X as it is, and Instagram, and Facebook to a lesser extent, but no, there is no one has come up with a reasonable, moderate way to respond to idiocy and extremism. And this latest attempt, I don't think it'll achieve anything. It might create an alternative platform, but I mean, I've seen, I'm quite active on I still call it Twitter, but I've seen a horrible increase, actually, and it was always very bad, in abuse and trolling and so on. I honestly don't see how we deal with this, because clever people always find a way around it. And even with this attempt to change Instagram, as far as I can see, anyone who really understands technology will be able to get over it. So no, and the government, for example, this is just financial, but not allowing us to post on Facebook or Instagram certain news items, understandable, actually quite a decent thing to attend. But the result is you can't share a lot of very innocent and unreasonable stuff on Facebook anymore. So yeah. No, this is a very, very tough one.
Well, pay to play for information, being distinctly different than news, pay to play for information becomes a very dangerous class separator. I mean, Karen, you know from your previous season of your life that when you were working in as a city councillor, that proximity is power. So who you surround yourself with is very, very important for, you know, creating allies and growing. And social media puts that stuff together. One quick example is that I had seen a great video on how to be a good man, how to be a good husband kind of video. I liked it. It was very, very good. I think it was very responsible and whole. Now I'm filled with all kinds of, you know, wild notions on what that makes a good husband that doesn't even make sense to me. Right. Proximity is not only power, it can also be very, very dangerous.
No, there's no question. And, you know, it's also, you know, if there was an attempt to respond to feeding our echo chamber, right, which we know is real, like you know, just to your point, you read articles and then suddenly you're inundated with like articles that may reinforce your beliefs, or it may actually not even be real. But so how do you guard against that? And, you know, and if this was an attempt to do that, well then, you know, I think that there's merit in that attempt. I don't think it's going to achieve that, but nonetheless, I think it's something that we should be aware of. And, you know, back to the earlier discussion we had, you know, when you have a problem, do you just throw up your hands and say, well, there's nothing we can do about it, so we just have to either ignore it or push forward? Or do we say this is actually seriously contributing to our social discourse in a very negative way, and we need to find a way to right the scales? And I think that whether this is it or not, some of the, you know, examples you've just described are extremely alarming for our civic discourse, and I think we should continue to figure out how to tilt the scales back to balance.
I have a friend that is a mega, like, healthy, responsible advocate for the environment, is educated in it, and stands for water, which is something that I like to follow and support her on. And she claims that Instagram is all over environmentalists now. Now, political people are claiming all over political people now. So it seems to be a much broader problem than what we've seen in the past. I appreciate both insights. This is a great one that I would love to talk to you both about more, because there's a lot to learn, I think, from everyone's perspective. Karen Stintz, Reverend Michael Corin, it's very nice to meet you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Coming up here on The Rush, I'm Shane Hewitt, guest host. We've got ourselves a little bit of a look, and I am looking at your calls and your text messages. There have been so many that have come in through the course of the day that I haven't had a chance to get to because I filled up the show with lots of stuff. And we want to hear your thoughts. Now, a couple of these conversations that we're looking forward to, pensions. Do you have one? Do you want one? Do you wish you had an MP pension? And then, of course, there is so much more that we can dig in on too, including dogs and all of that coming up.